You know, Andrea, you have very, what shall I say, mature taste.
Why? Because I like porcelain and silver? Classics never go out of style.
This is The Wrong Thing I Say. Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210 edition. Today's episode is Season 2, Episode 12, Down and Out of District in Beverly Hills. Anyone who says mature is someone not to be trusted. Here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Sarah.
Tara. It's not as bad as amateur.
Oh,
but it's pretty bad. I'm with you, Dave. Hi, guys.
Hi. That klezmer music has never been more appropriate than it is for this very episode.
Oh, really?
But we will get to that.
Leo, is that the bell?
But we're not there yet. Let's start with our B story, which let's say it's Steve ain't saying she a gold digger. We start this plot line with a basic blonde basically loitering around the peach pit waiting for someone she says. Until she notices Steve at the jukebox, and then she goes over and they start chatting, and we hear where things are going in clip number 2.
Well, what's the matter?
Well, my ride didn't show up, and I don't know how I'm going to get home.
Well, that's easy enough. I can give you a ride.
You can?
Absolutely. That takes care of that crisis. Anything else?
Yes. I'm starving. Why don't I buy you something to eat to thank you for the ride?
You want to pay for me?
Yeah.
Well, that's a switch.
Oh, no. You know what? Maybe I better give you a rain check. It's getting kind of late for me.
What's the rush?
I'm addicted to reruns of the Hartley House. I never miss it.
Me neither.
So even though we all just heard her say the Hartley House, when we see the title card of the show, it just says Hartley House. So,
oh, boy.
No one caught it, or she's an old lady referring to shows like The Alias or whatever. I think every show has a "the" in front. This girl's name is Christine, and she, quote, can't believe, unquote, that Samantha Sanders is Steve's mom. He just wants to make out, obviously, and that's what happens in clip number 3.
You know, I don't usually do this with somebody I just met, but...
But what?
Somehow I feel like I know you already.
Burp. When we next see them, Christine and Steve are at the peach pit. She's counting down to the second that it's the 1 week anniversary of when they met. Ugh, she is horrible.
And that the perm top knot. Oh God,
she's so bad. There's a lot of her in the visual aid, so you can get a sense of her.
And I couldn't figure out where I knew her from, where she was also annoying, and it's from Charles in Charge.
I knew it. Yep, she's terrible.
She was also 31 when this was filmed.
Oh boy.
Enjoy.
Well, maybe it was because she and Ian Ziering went to school together.
Yes, old people in love.
So while she thin-lippedly kisses him across the peach pit, Kelly stares suspiciously, tells Donna that she has no class. And then when we cut back to Steve and Christine, she's saying she has plans, can't do something with him. And then he says he has REM tickets, and all of a sudden her plans are done. And Kelly gives voice to her concerns about this girl the next day at school in clip number 4.
Steve-O, are you coming with us or what?
Well, I can't make it. I'm going to see REM that night.
Ooh, with Christine? Sounds a little continuous.
Sounds kind of nauseating if you ask me.
Oh, do you have some objections?
Hey, it's not my place to criticize.
Never stopped you before.
Steve, I think we should talk about this in private.
Dude, God, will you look at the time? Don't we have a bungee?
No. Stay right here. I want you to hear how Kelly disses my new girlfriend and pretends it's for my own good. Come on, Kel. Tell me everything that's wrong with Christy.
Look, all I'm going to say is you get what you pay for.
Ooh, good line. And
you burnt.
Very, very true, as we will soon come to see, if we couldn't already tell already from the reference to the REM tickets. And then Brandon also has thoughts on this, which he shouldn't, in clip number 5.
It's amazing how a little competition stirs the pangs of jealousy in a woman.
Fuck you! Wow.
Are you the little competition they were referring to, Brandon?
Right. Oh God, she's not jealous. She's concerned, and she's gonna end up being right. So fuck you. Ugh.
I guess it's not his problem if it's not his money, but whatever.
Right. Steve defends himself by accidentally shitting on people who live in the valley, and Andrea, who's been standing there silently letting that remark by Brandon pass, by the way, which not okay, Andrea. So then Steve feels bad. We will understand why later when we get to Andrea's storyline. Yes, it's an Andrea storyline in the A plot. I'm as surprised as you.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're watching Steve bring Christine to the concert in a stretch limo, smugging past David in line. Sarah has clipped a great shot of all of the fashion don'ts of everyone involved. David also.
I tried to put a bunch of arrows on it, and then you like literally couldn't see anything in the frame. So I just was like. 91.
Yeah.
Good luck.
She's in like this gauzy white dress and like cowboy boots and a jean jacket. And she's got the froofy perm top knot and this white scrunchie. It's just like, we just go look because I can't possibly do justice to it. Also, David is apparently seeing this concert by himself, which is weird. Afterwards, Christine is disappointed that Steve couldn't get backstage passes and she's pouting about it. But then at the exact wrong time, David comes out. He's got his program autograph because he snuck backstage. And then that just kicks Christine's mood into bitch overdrive, which we hear in clip six.
So where is that stupid driver anyway?
Well, he probably went around back.
Yeah, well, we're never using this company again. And don't give him a tip.
She's really getting used to this son of a TV star lifestyle pretty quickly for someone who apparently goes to North Culver High School, of all places. She also stomps up to the door of the limo and then stands there and waits for Steve to catch up and open it for her. So she's like your basic nightmare, if in case you couldn't tell. And in the back of the limo, Steve is really not reading the room at all as he brings up the movie No Way Out and tells her there's a scene where people have sex in the back of a limo. She refers again to the stupid driver. Steve just tries to cheer her up, and we hear how that goes in clip number 7.
The question is, did you have fun tonight?
Yeah, I did until a few minutes ago.
You know, I was thinking maybe next week we could go to a jewelry store. Pick out a token of my affection.
Oh, Steve. I think this whole limo thing got to me because, well, it's just that you make me feel like Cinderella. I mean, you're so generous. I'm just afraid it's all gonna disappear.
Well, it won't. Believe me, you deserve it. Now all we have to decide is, should it be jewelry for the hand? The ear. The neck.
Stop there.
Oh, Steven, I love you.
I love you too.
They've known each other a week. Okay, that's Steve putting up the barrier in the limousine because it was open the entire time that she was bitching about the stupid driver who could 100% hear them.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes time for them to make out without touching anyone's boob, put up the barrier.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, so I think we're supposed to think that she fucked him in the car, but that's not actually made explicit at any point, as it were. And then the next day at school, there's talk of Steve and Christine double dating with Brenda and Dylan, which please go to the visual aids because Sarah clipped or screen grabbed a beautiful shot of Kelly in her pug embroidered blouse, which looks like a reject from the 90210 movie from the Brenda pile because it's really out of character for her.
So mumsy. Like, I think even Carol Potter would have been like, yeah, no.
Yeah, it's really very weird. And then when we pick back up with Christine, she's being snotty that they're having dinner in at the Walsh house. Brenda and Dylan do a great eye roll at each other, which Sarah also screen grabbed for your enjoyment. And everyone can kind of tell that Christine is not going to be fun to hang out with, but they try to smooth things over as best they can in clip number 8.
You ladies dangle somewhere. Me and Steve-O will whip up some more derbs.
We will?
Yeah.
Yeah, we will.
Good. I always prefer to be waited on.
I noticed that about you.
Well, I thought we were going out tonight, not doing all the drudge work ourselves. I mean, I could do that at home. You know, personally, I prefer staying at home.
I mean, it's so expensive to go out, and normally the food's not even that great.
Unless you know where to go, like Steve does. And then you don't have to do the dishes.
Well, baby, I'll do the dishes.
Good. Hey, let's go look at your clothes.
That's kind of her in a nutshell. Or it would be if this scene didn't happen. So they go upstairs. Christine is talking about how she and Brenda should go shopping together sometime. Brenda says she's having a temporary recession in her checkbook, which, question mark, you don't have a job. How do you have any money ever? Moving on.
And where else would you have a recession?
Right.
Your pants? Shut up, Brenda.
And then Christine's all like, do you like my dress? Steve bought it for me. She's been dreaming about getting him to buy her diamond earrings and take her for spring break in Hawaii. Brenda tries to stick up for Steve. It does not go well in clip number 9.
Christine, you know, you really haven't known Steve that long.
You know, Steve reminds me of Richard Gere in the movie Pretty Woman.
And you're Julia Roberts, right?
Why not?
Because she was a prostitute.
Yeah, but she looked great, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, sure. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, like, beyond how obvious it is that she's a gold digger.
Yes.
And I can see the rest of the gang just sort of deciding to let it go because Steve is always so thirsty that it's like, let's just let him get it in and basically pay for it with dinner and jewelry so we can stop fucking hearing about it and he'll stop, like, horn-dogging on Kelly.
Yeah.
That aside, like, being a gold digger does require some subtlety, and she just seems like she has some kind of spectrum challenge.
Yeah.
She's just, like, maladroit. I don't know. It's very weird.
She is super weird. She's like, I mean, I won't say sociopathic because that word gets thrown around a lot, but maybe I will. Brenda then lays into her some more, which is when Steve shows up to say dinner's ready, but they've both lost their appetite. And of course, Steve thinks it's Brenda's fault based on past experience, assumes that Kelly has put her up to starting a fight with Christine. Brenda tries to tell Steve that Christine as much as admitted that she was using him for his money, but he says he can take care of himself. And he thinks he can until the next day when he goes to tell Brandon that he thinks that maybe Brenda was right and that does seem like Christine is obsessed with money. And he wants someone to like him for who he is, so he sets up a sting operation at a jewelry store, essentially, getting her to look around and try and guess what thing he has picked out for her. And then he hands her a box, and it contains a very average-looking bracelet, and this is her reaction in clip 10.
That's it?
Don't you like it?
Well, it's nice, but it's not that special.
Silly of me. I thought maybe because it came from me, it would be special to you. But that's okay. If you don't want it, maybe someone else will.
Steve, wait, please, don't get mad. I mean, let me see it again. I didn't get a good enough look.
Forget it. I don't want to give it to you anymore.
But I was just being honest.
I know. Like the way you were honest that first day in the peach pit about not knowing who my mom was, right?
How did you know that?
I didn't until right now.
Oh! Who told you that? You did.
Right into his trap she fell.
P.S. when she's like, let me look at it again. She's still holding the box. Yeah. Like, guys, get a continuity editor, please. Wake her up. Have her on set for this shit.
Yeah. And that's pretty much the end of Christine, as it should be. Let's just say this character has learned some lessons that she can probably put to use for the rest of her life in Los Angeles, because it's not like she'll probably be short of opportunities to work this con on other dumb rich guys in the future. That's what LA is for. There, I said it.
And Steve gets another, like, I confused this with another con.
Yeah.
The Southern girl with the tour. Do you remember her?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. The cop and a half.
And then I was like,
wait,
why doesn't she have a Southern accent? And then I was like, oh, no, this happens again? Fuck.
Yeah, that's right. So later, we wrap things up when Steve mopes his way into the peach pit, recaps the whole thing to Brandon, and runs into Andrea at the jukebox, asks him basically why she likes him. In a very vulnerable way, she says she says she likes him because he's like a little boy who just likes to have fun. He's also kind of cute, even if he's a little bit rude. And the one true note of this whole storyline comes in clip 11.
I am rude, I know that. Gotta work on that. Sometimes I lie awake at night, remembering all the stupid cracks I said to people, wondering why they even talked to me at all.
I mean, not that he ever does work on it, because he doesn't, but that feels like a very truthful thing for a high school age person, or any person really, to think about themselves. So I thought I would include it as, you know, a little sorbet for the rest of this nonsense.
And it's also like, I always like these little moments he has with Andrea.
Yeah.
They're just like, they do seem like they have this good like co-worker relationship within the gang that I've always enjoyed.
Yep, me too. So later, Kelly comes in and sees Steve moping alone. So she goes over to talk to him. He's sorry that he didn't listen to her, and he tries to give her the bracelet. She's like, it's nice, but no thanks. You bought it for someone else. But they smooth things over. She invites him to a movie. They argue about the genre, and then they leave together, and everyone is confused watching them leave. And I made a gif of it because it just really goes on for a long time. Moving on. The A story, Andrea's big lie. For reasons unknown, we open with Andrea having a nightmare about coming to school naked, which, I mean, I guess I get it, but it also seems like really shoehorned into this particular storyline, given how things go, but whatever. Then we see her actually commuting to school, and as I wrote in my notes, if the idea of seeing her entire commute is to make us understand how boring and endless it is, mission accomplished, because it's way too long.
Mm-hmm.
And then Andrea enters the Blaze office, droops at the sight of Brandon and Emily chatting in a completely friendly, innocuous way, which I gift because it's her reaction is so outsized.
Is it Charlie Brown?
Kind of. She really does like kind of turn in her back, and it's, you have to see it.
And you actually hear doo 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 doo, but it's in that like Hungarian minor chord violin because of the storyline that we're about to quote unquote enjoy.
Back
to you.
So Brandon is excited to see her because he has news in clip 12.
You know how you said I should enter the Times High School Journalism Competition?
Yeah. Did you win?
No, I didn't enter.
Why not?
Well, I started thinking about that food service expose that you wrote.
Oh, the underbelly of cafeteria cuisine?
Yeah, you going undercover was inspirational.
Oh, and who would have thought I'd look so good in a hairnet, huh?
I have 5,000 questions about this. Starting with, where was she undercover? When did this happen? Was it at West Beverly? Presumably not because she goes there, but like what other school hired her to go work there when in the context of the show she's supposed to be a teenager? Like
Well, and what expose?
Right.
Like, is the food good? Is that why it needed an expose? Or is there like, what was it, Buffy, where they'd find out that it's the
it's people
an earshot and it's the lunch lady pouring rat poison into the whatever, horse meat surprise, like.
Uh-huh.
Oh, this is not the first time, like, she's made a number of references. I think she makes one later to, like, going undercover on the cafeteria story.
Yeah.
Like, oh, girl.
It's really does not, this idea does not stand up to any kind of scrutiny. Like, it would be a different thing if it was, like, you enlisted an informant to go undercover for you or whatever, but, like, whatever, it doesn't come up again other than that the story existed and apparently it was good. Because he submitted the story on Andrea's behalf and it has been named a finalist or something or won, I forget, it doesn't matter.
Yes, nobody else entered.
For the point of the story, she's going to be under some scrutiny because of this story winning. He clearly did not give this 15 seconds of thought because her immediate reaction is terror at being found out at her whole going to the school while living out of district scam. But Brandon thought about it long enough to have used her grandmother's address when he entered it. I do have in my notes here that they don't know yet whether she's won. She's just a nominee at this point. So later when we meet back up with her, actually in a cute dress for once, as I have in my notes, Sarah screen grabbed it and it was the exact same one that I was referring to. She's telling Brandon how much she's freaking out when Mrs. Teasley comes along to congratulate her on having won. The school board is sending a reporter and a photographer to her house to do a story on her.
No, they're not. This contrivance is the worst.
There
are a million other ways they could have blown up her spot and they picked this. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, why? Exactly. So Andrea's tries to hold it together as long as Mrs. Teasley's there, and then she shits a brick because she's not sure what's going to happen with her grandmother, the wild card. Let's meet Grandma Rose. She is a character in clip 13.
How can I call you first if you weren't even home to answer the phone?
I just went for some refreshments. Maybe Brockton would like something.
It's Brandon Walsh.
Ah, excuse me. I didn't think it was Brandon Mandelbaum.
So she's...
She's a Shinto. Oh, yes, yeah. I know. That's what you were going to ask. Andrea keeps trying to explain the situation to Grandma Rose, but she's overbearing. And then all of her even more overbearing friends come over to play Kaluki.
And then there's a like running gag with her calling him Branford and Broxton. And,
yeah.
Wait, what's Kaluki?
I sort of enjoyed it. I like Lainey Kazan. I think she's funny in this role.
She isn't.
But this is the only time she's the grandma, right?
Correct. When the grandma character comes back in season 4, but she's played by a different actress. And I don't know how they got her for this part. It must have been because her kids or grandchildren or whatever really liked the show, because she is way too good for this show.
What is Kaluki?
Kaluki is a game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anything more about it than that. They don't really show them play it. I assume it's something like Mahjong, because I don't remember seeing cards, but whatever. It's a game that old Jewish ladies play.
Okay.
Hold, please.
Sounds like Kaluki Vision.
I don't think it's Kaluki Vision. So,
Kaluki, Jamaican rummy.
Oh.
It's a version of contract rummy, which is very popular in Jamaica.
Hmm. That sounds fun.
It totally answers all my questions.
So then the friends come over and they're interested in Brandon in clip 14.
Aren't you going to introduce us to your boyfriend?
Rose, your granddaughter has such good taste.
Girls, this is Mr. Branford Walsh.
His name is Brandon. He's not my boyfriend. Grandma, can I talk to you for a moment, please?
Excuse me a second. Make yourself at home.
Someone's coming over any minute to interview me and take some pictures.
That's wonderful. For a job, darling?
No, this article I wrote, it won a journalism award.
Oh, darling. That's so wonderful. They're going to give you a plaque or something?
I don't know, Grandma, but when Mr. Kramer comes, we have to give him the impression that I do live here.
But you don't live here.
I know, but you remember when you said that I could use your address for school, that it would be okay?
And what did I say? I said as long as I wasn't involved.
Well, now you just have to be slightly involved.
Slightly involved? There is no such thing. That's like being a little bit pregnant.
Grandma, can't you just pretend there is? Look, if I get expelled, it could ruin everything that I've worked for.
God damn it, Grandma, get on board!
So what, this person is here to question me?
No, he might not even talk to you that much, but if he does, I just want to make sure that we have our facts straight.
Our facts straight? You don't want our facts straight, you want the made-up story straight.
No, I mean, like, if, you know, he wants to know how long I've been living here or anything.
Andrea, darling, I'm gonna tell you how it's gonna be. If he comes here to interview you, that's fine with me. I'm gonna keep my mouth closed, I'll play Kaluki. But if he asks me a direct question, I'm sorry if you're gonna be expelled. But I am not going to lie.
Okay, so the end of this conversation happens directly in front of the door to the apartment. So the reporter is right on the other side. He definitely heard all of that.
Yeah, and he is a reporter.
Mm-hmm. So even though I have in my notes that he cares about Andrea's living situation to a non-credible degree, I mean, he heard the end of that, so maybe it is credible. And he is definitely suspicious, as we hear in clip 15.
So, you sleep on this couch, huh?
Yes, it's really comfortable.
Oh, does it fold out?
Yes. No.
What happened to keeping your mouth shut?
It depends on your definition of fold.
Does it?
Well, I won't keep you.
Oh, Mr. Kramer, you know what you should put in your profile? That Andrea is a pleasure to be around. Not like some kids. In fact, on most days, you wouldn't even think a teenager lived here.
Okay.
You know, don't help. I mean, that's hilarious, but don't help.
Yeah. I'm also kind of shocked that this has continued as long as it has, if she's so dead set against lying herself. Like, if you really are that concerned about it, why did you agree in the first place? whatever.
Yeah, I don't, and it's not like a crime is being committed.
Right.
It's not like, well, I know she cheats on her taxes, but I didn't say anything. Like, what? Whatever. Let's move on.
Yeah. Also, the guy is just supposed to be doing, I mean, as you already said, it's absurd that this is even happening, but it's not like he's an investigator for the school. Like, he's just coming to do a little newsletter item on, you know, nice girl wins journalism award, and it's turning into like an interrogation about her life. Why? Anyway.
Yeah. This is for the Los Angeles Times.
Right.
Like, if it were the Lake Wobegon Gazette, maybe I could buy it. But, like, you know, this is a city of some size. It's right. A professional paper. It's big, won Pulitzers. What are you fucking doing?
It's a big school board. Like, they're, you know, whatever. This is all set up.
Just wait till Donna Martin gets drunk at prom.
So, yeah, this is all set up for what is, in fact, the worst exchange of the episode. And that comes in clip 16.
Grandma, don't you want what's best for me?
Not if it means schlepping on a bus for hours, breathing exhaust fumes for the privilege of cavorting with rich kids.
I can't believe I have to defend myself to you. Aren't you on my side?
Against who? Your conscience?
Grandma, I don't like lying either. But sometimes the ends justify the means. This is one of those times.
Maybe to you it is.
When you were my age, you assumed a different identity.
My sweetheart, when I was your age, it was a matter of survival. It was a question of life and death. I was trying to avoid a gas chamber, not trying to sneak into some school district. What you're suggesting is insignificant in comparison. And don't you ever say otherwise.
I'm sorry. You may think it's insignificant, but it's my life.
Really? Okay. Cut. It's just Andrea. No one cares.
I mean, furthermore, you trying to go to West Beverly under assumed address is not the same as trying to not die in the Holocaust, you fucking asshole. Jesus Christ.
And I really, like, there are times when, like, the characters are self-centered in a way that is believable for teenagers that you're like, really? But then you're like, well, right, that's what it was like to be 16.
Yes.
This is way beyond... Yeah. Especially for Andrea.
It really is so far out of character. It's absurd.
And it's pretty offensive to me that the writers think that someone who, like, changed her identity and escaped the Holocaust and came here would even care this much about this point. Like, yeah. You know? That she'd be like, you know, it's fine. Whatever.
Yeah.
Family's important. Do what you want.
Right.
I didn't die. Huzzah. I mean, what do I know?
Yeah, it's bad. I mean, that's like definitely a low point for this storyline. I mean, obviously it can't really get lower than that. And it doesn't. But let's move on because it's not over yet. So Mrs. Teasley calls Andrea to her office. This Mr. Kramer, who was over, apparently had grave doubts that she actually lives with her grandma. So he's not going to complete the profile. Like, again... No sense does this make. But Mrs. Teasley has to now initiate a formal inquiry, but it's no problem because she definitely does live with her grandma, right? And Andrea's like, totally. So when we next see her, we find out Grandma Rose has agreed to let Andrea move in, but she's still in a tizzy, and Branton tries to smooth things over with what was, let's not forget, completely his fault in the first place, other than the fact that she was lying, which that was her fault. But the rest is his fault in clip 17.
Andrea, I feel like an idiot.
Finally.
I had no idea this was going to happen. I brought it on myself.
I just wish there was something I could do.
Well, you could help me move on Saturday.
You got it. Oh, wait, this Saturday I got to go dune biking with Dylan.
What?
You've got to go dune buggying with Dylan.
I know.
I hate Brandon intensely, and I hate Dylan even more.
You don't
dune buggying?
Look, no one ever has to go dune buggying. Kids, if you're listening, someone tries to pressure you into dune buggying, remember, you can always say no. No means no when it comes to dune buggying. God. Anyway,
don't go dune buggying just because somebody says so.
So he tries to anyway, he tries to
dune buggying sucks.
We lost Dave. Brandon tries to make this better by offering to come back earlier from said dune buggying and helping her move in. But in fact, that doesn't happen. And Andrea Morosely says maybe she should go with them since she might break her neck and then all of her problems would be over, which dark. I feel I should say for the listener is the only one who's holding it together. This is our third episode record of the day, so people are a little more punchy than usual, maybe.
Oh, jeez.
Okay. Right. I'm sorry. Who was about to break their neck?
Andrea.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
I'm good. I'm fine.
So later, Andrea and Grandma Rose are awkwardly chatting while making up the couch that does not fold out. It turns out Brandon blew her off, so she took the bus there with her things. Again, I know I keep bringing this up whenever her parents are mentioned, but do they ever drive her anywhere? She lives in the Valley and all of her social activities are in Beverly Hills. Why do they always make her take the bus? She only has one sister, as far as we know. She can't take up that much of their attention. Whatever. She, to her credit, does apologize for making the terrible Holocaust analogy. And then the phone rings. It's Andrea's mom. And we soon figure out there's bad blood between her and Grandma Rose. And Andrea's only been chatting with her for a second before looking up to see Grandma Rose making the most over it face, which you can see in the visual aids. It's amazing.
Best.
Later at school, Donna makes a stupid comment about Andrea's school situation, and we hear that in clip 18.
Hey, Andrea, everything's gonna be okay, trust me. You just gotta look on the bright side.
What is the bright side, Brandon? I mean, I miss my family. I have no privacy. And my grandmother is a walking time bomb.
What do you mean?
I mean, there's no way to know what she's gonna tell the investigator tomorrow.
Andrea, let me ask you a question. Is this school really worth all the hassle?
You people have no idea how good you have it, do you? You think every place is like this.
Do you realize that the school I'm supposed to go to doesn't have enough funds to even put out a real paper?
I guess I didn't think of that. Why shouldn't you? Why should any of you? You buy new clothes every weekend. You have CD players in your cars. You have no idea. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I don't know why she's sorry, because she's right.
Yeah.
But at the same time, every time I watch the scene, I expect her to say, like, the school I'm supposed to go to doesn't have funds to have, like, microscopes in the biology lab or something. Like, not putting out a paper is not that big a
deal. I have to use the mimeograph. Shut up.
Yeah, I mean, my school didn't have a paper either, and it wasn't because we didn't have money, but whatever. Of course, because it's Andrea, she has to be made to feel sorry for making the rich people feel guilty about being rich, whatever. They move on with the conversation there, as she says, it still looks like she's an overnight guest, so cue the makeover. All the girls come over to help youthify a corner of the living room and sort of, you know, fence it off and make it look like it's a bedroom that she actually sleeps in. And all of that is fine, except when they put up posters with push pins. Not okay.
Yeah. And Dirty Dancing poster. Continuity.
Mm-hmm. Then finally, the finishing touches. Kelly puts a framed photo of Andrea with her mom on a mantle or a shelf or something, and Grandma Rose takes off. Andrea takes it down, but I put it in the visual aid, so for the 1 second that you see it, you can see that Andrea does have a mother, because I don't think we ever see her talk for the whole rest of the season. Because, anyway, in addition to not driving Andrea anywhere, she's also not in very many scenes. And later, Andrea tries to talk about the rift between her mother and Grandma Rose. Grandma Rose shuts her down. Later still, Andrea calls her mom, and Grandma Rose hilariously gets out the vacuum from nowhere and starts vacuuming right next to her chair while she's on the phone. Until Andrea hangs up and is like, she tries again to open up a dialogue about her mother. We learn that Andrea's mom and Grandma Rose haven't spoken in 3 years. She thinks it's because her mom isn't Jewish. But Grandma Rose says it has nothing to do with Jewish or not Jewish. It's that her mom has no respect for Grandma Rose. She didn't call when Grandma Rose broke her leg, blah, blah, blah. And then Andrea's like, whatever, and goes to her couch and starts packing. She says she doesn't want to be in the middle of it anymore. And then, I don't know, I guess maybe it was late and Lainey Kazan was getting tired and the director didn't want to correct her. And this happens, clip 19.
Andrea, come back.
She called her Andrea in an earlier scene, so whatever.
Yeah, I didn't catch that she had called her Andrea before.
She did.
But I feel like her Andrea's given name is Andrea.
Right.
And that her, you know, her family's probably like, whatever, Andrea. Just like, it's Andrea. Like, not at home it isn't.
That's
so,
true.
Whatever.
Perhaps. And yeah, so where they left it is Andrea tells Grandma Rose that she should just tell the investigator the truth for the sake of saving their relationship so that she can have her grandmother back. But that doesn't mean she can't be very self-pitying. And when we next see her, she's at school typing out her letter of resignation as the editor of The Blaze. So let's just hear a little bit of clip 20. whatever you're doing, stop, because that's obviously an error noise.
Oh my God.
Not
great.
What any word processing program has ever sounded like, unless you're doing something wrong and it's broken.
Yeah, it also sounds like, you know, at the end of All the President's Men when you're watching the teletype and it's like, it's that loud.
Yeah.
And so, quite a bit less professional, sorry, Andrea. Like a letter of resignation from your high school paper.
Well, Sarah, she doesn't want to leave things, you know, people unprepared if she has to depart the school in disgrace and chaos.
Well, and I mean, are she and Brandon even allowed to be in the same car? Like, is it that intense of a situation? Like, what if they're both killed?
Right.
Who takes over? That guy in the background in the rugby shirt?
Sean Levy, who we'll meet in the later season? I don't know. So there's a chat about what she's going to do. He asks if maybe he should see if his parents would let her live with them, but she says that's not the answer either. It's too much responsibility for the Walshes. They would have to become her legal guardians, but instead she has to look at this like a challenge, which to me means like it's like Max Fisher going to the public school in Rushmore trying to start like the astronomy club and stuff.
Oh,
she's
my
just
God.
Gonna sweep into her legit public school and fix everything for all the nerds.
Oh,
like
are
herself.
They? Totally.
But anyway, she's, you know, thinking ahead to what kind of a challenge this is going to be doesn't stop her being maudlin in clip 21.
You know, the funny thing is, I was really starting to feel like I was part of the gang, you know?
Think again, Bubby.
I mean, you're friends. Our friends. They don't look at me like a geek who lives on the wrong side of the tracks. And I know that there's more to them than their spiffy clothes and their fancy cars.
Spiffy?
I guess that's something that we never would have worn if I hadn't come here. And that's worth something, isn't it?
Not really.
No.
Not the same as the better education you'll get, which is supposed to be the point. But
right. I mean, rich people are humanized for you. Like, yay? I don't know. So I don't know what the timeline is, but sometime after she sees Steve having had his dust up with Christine at the jewelry store, which was supposed to be at 3 or whatever, the investigation's still at Grandma Rose's. The report is going to be favorable somehow. And Grandma Rose gives her a hug. She stands in front of the most Jewish painting ever that someone went and found at like the Fairfax flea market the day before, which you can see in the visual aids, of course.
The Bnei Bris yard sale.
Totally. Yeah. Grandma Rose has learned to, once again, how to pronounce Andrea's name the way she cares for it to be said. Andrea asks if Grandma Rose could stand living with Andrea for real, and Grandma Rose says yes, she could definitely use the company. But first, they will have to make peace with Andrea's parents, and so they call, and, you know, that's the olive branch, blah, blah. No one cares. We've never met Andrea's parents, so why we're supposed to care about their bad relationship with someone's mother-in-law, I don't really know. Moving on.
Do we ever meet them? I don't think we do.
They show up at the wedding when she gets married to Jesse in season four, but okay. They don't get lines. Like they show up when the ceremony is like about to start, as I recall. And like, we just see them. They maybe say hi. I think that's it.
Right. And once they see what she's wearing, they flee in fucking terror, as they should. That has actually already been clipped. If you guys go to the Beverly Hills 90210 page on previously.tv, mm-hmm. Or just type "Who hurt you, Andrea" in search box. That should actually bring it up.
I mean, she was pregnant at the time, but still, it's rough. It's rough stuff.
Well, but the little Mary Poppins angle. You know what?
I'm not.
Never mind.
Defending it, and I never would.
You will get there,
and I won't. So let's wrap things up. We end at the Peach Pit. They bring out a cake for Andrea that just says "Good luck" on it because they didn't know what was going to happen, whether she was coming or going or what. And she just has to continue making amends for telling them all they have CD players in their car in clip 22.
You guys, thank you for being there for me. It's great. What, you thought we wouldn't be? I don't know. I figured that, you know, I would be gone and you guys would just move on. Out of sight, out of mind.
Not. No way.
That would never happen with someone as special as you.
All these other one episode losers, though, they can go straight to hell.
Yep.
None of them were special, apparently. Everyone else who drifted in and then immediately back out of their lives to be forgotten in exactly the way that Andrea described. And then finally, I just clipped this because it's just another example of like backsliding to, we don't know how to end this episode. Let's just do something that takes a long time and is boring in clip 23.
Who would like to?
Exactly. Yellow Rose of Texas.
Piece of carrots.
What?
Piece of carrots. Rhubarb.
Guys, just go ahead and improvise. No, don't. Just cut. Cut is an okay thing to say.
You have to put it on a plate. Oh my god.
Like stuff.
And.
Yeah. Just point the camera at me and I'll just do stuff. Stuff. Yeah, stuff.
Stuff.
Yeah. So that's how Grandma Rose decided to get on board with the lie of who lived where and save Andrea's career at West Beverly. Thank God, I guess.
Sure. And congratulations to Lainey Kazan for like seeing this episode and being like, I don't need to ever do this again and mm-hmm. not doing it again.
Did they ever see her again?
Also, Lainey Kazan was born in 1940. So I'm thinking she looks awfully youthful for a survivor.
Wow.
Show,
that's important intel. Damn. All right. Well, let's wrap it up. Most valuable player of this episode. I got to go with Grandma Rose.
Yep. Seconded.
And I don't know what Andrea's mother ever did to piss her off, but I'm sure she was wrong. Brandon.
Huh. Interesting. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with the Los Angeles Times' Metro Desk Assignments Editor. Son, you're fucking doing it wrong.
No. The prize is awarded by the Times. It's like a school board reporter that's doing this for like the school board paper. But either way, that person.
They're still doing it wrong. Agreed. Someone is doing it wrong.
Well, the LA Times did give her the award, so they're on the hook for that one.
Yeah, you got to wonder what other shit got turned in.
Yeah, but I'm giving it to Brandon because, you know, if he hadn't done this thoughtless thing, none of this would have happened to Andrea and she would still be living with her parents. So shut up, Brandon.
Yeah, and then... You know, no one wants to help a friend move, but Dune bugging with Dylan.
Yeah, try that excuse next time someone tries to ask you to help them move and see how it goes over. I can't. I have to go dune bugging.
I'm totally going to do it. Not that anyone ever asked me that anymore, because everyone's like over 25 and can handle their own shit. But
yeah. Still, it could happen.
It's a good,
now
it's
you
a good
have,
excuse. Yeah, I'm sorry I can't record next week. I'm going to be dune bugging.
This might be, we might not be able to come up with the full five, but let's still do it.
Bad, bad, and dangerous to me.
The Kim Challenge, as many reasons as we can think of from this episode that Dylan is mad, bad, and dangerous to know, Sarah.
Dune buggies?
Yep.
Also, while he's changing the CD in his car, which actually he wouldn't have that because that's a, what year is that Porsche?
I don't know.
It's old, right?
Old.
Anyway.
Well, I mean, let's look at the dune bugging phenomenon, right? Because it has many parts, each of which could be, you know, dangerous or bad for you, which is sand tracking, mm-hmm. right? You're going to be on the beach in your dune buggy. It's fine if you get sand in the dune buggy, but then you got to sand all over your feet and your shoes. And then when you go into your car to drive home, you're going to track sand into your car. Nobody wants sand in
your
car.
You're also destroying the dunes. Yeah. Yes. You're an enemy of the environment. Mm-hmm. You'll probably be wearing something that emphasizes your 21-inch waist.
I'd imagine dune buggies are not fuel efficient. They're going to be yeah. polluting the waters near the ocean,
yep.
killing all sorts of indigenous marine life to the shores, off the shores of California.
Furthermore, I don't know what the regulations are in terms of renting dune buggies, but I know if you want to rent a car, you have to be 25. So if Dylan is renting these dune buggies with his fake ID, he could get both the dune buggy rental agency operator into big trouble.
Yep.
And possibly, if anything did go wrong,
that's
you
right.
did break your neck, it would be a liability question of who would be responsible.
And it would be him. He
and we're
out
just
of pocket.
To assume that he went back to AA once, thanks to right. Brandon, and that fixed everything. So who knows? He could drink one swallow from an airline bottle of Ron Rico, and then it's all going to go haywire.
I got one last reason why this is mad, bad, and dangerous to know.
Yep.
Because after you dune buggy, you got a kick-ass caricature waiting to happen that you can look back on and say, yeah, I really did do that. I do enjoy dune buggying. I do remember doing that. Please draw me dune buggying.
Oh my God, we more than did it.
Oh, we so did it. Thanks for listening, you guys. Next time on Again With This, Donna wears a mermaid costume, hilarity does not ensue, and Kelly almost gets raped at some frat party by some guy who looks kind of familiar. You can see the visual aids from that and this episode and many other fine television programs of actual quality at our site, previously.tv. You can follow us on Twitter at PreviouslyTV. You can follow our fine producer Dave at Glark, my co-host Tara at Tara Ariano, and I'm at Tomato Nation. See you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeperoni.
This one's for you, Grandma Rose.
What? No taste.